It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel. For the past 14 years, Mae has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to political conspiracies. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel. It's Dialogue Conspiracy in Carmel, California. It's number 281, and it's August 8, 1977. In the future weeks, I will be talking about some subjects that are in the news. Lyndon Johnson, the stuffing of the ballot boxes in Texas. I think there's an important story in the necessity of having Lyndon Johnson in Congress in 1948 and wanting Richard Nixon elected in 1946 and put in by the same people. And I'll be doing more on the mind control experiments and a lot about Gary Powers and the U2 and his death in Los Angeles. I have a fellow researcher here with me today from New York, Bob Raftel, and I explained to him that I'd be talking a lot about Lee Harvey Oswald in Mexico, and he's done quite a lot about Oswald in Mexico, right, Bob?
Somewhat, yeah.
Somewhat? He's visiting out here. This is summer vacation, and there's a lot of visiting researchers, so it's good for the listeners to have an opportunity to meet these other people and share some of this information. And I will be going, the bulk of the program today will be going into what Mr. Field said when I met him in Sacramento about Lee Harvey Oswald in Mexico, and also into the Torbett document, which we were talking about before we went on the air. I do want to read to the listeners a letter I received from KZAP. I got it Saturday, and I want to share it with you because this audience in the Northern California area has been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy for 3 or 4 years. It's from the program director, Robert Williams, and he said, "Dear May, KZAP is in the process of reorganizing some of our programming to better meet the needs of our audience and the requirements of FCC, whatever those are. To these end, we decided to discontinue airing Dialogue Conspiracy in its 45-minute form to give Chan more time to discuss local problems in Sacramento with his guests and callers." And they suggested that KZAP call me for 10 minutes every Sunday evening, and we would discuss, Chan and I, for 10 minutes, Travis, the news of the week and what I thought was important in the news. And then we would hang up, and then you listeners would have 45 minutes to discuss with him the program that you want. There was also a suggestion to ask Sacramento State Radio, KERS, to carry Dialogue Conspiracy, or University of California, Davis. We did have Dialogue Conspiracy on Davis for around 6 months, and there seemed to be an overlapping in time that was so close to KZAP that it duplicated for many people. They were able to pick up the Sunday night show, so we didn't continue with the Davis. But I really feel badly. I can't tell you how badly I feel about this. I spoke to Travis this morning on the air, and I believe this will be the last 45-minute program there. I have not wanted to cut Dialogue Conspiracy to 30 minutes because I think it's necessary to have 45 minutes of intelligent news during the week. I know Travis's show before this comes on is marvelous, but I feel very badly. I feel badly because for many reasons. First of all, it's an audience that's unique with these programs. I do get cassettes out to other places, and reels are duplicated. I have places now that do it, and not on a regular basis, like KZAP, surreptitiously placed at odd hours into radio stations around the country because there was this conflict at WBAI with having Dialogue Conspiracy on there and this information that was coming out. And now that station is completely devoid of this kind of information. This is a unique program because I get information to the prisoners at Folsom every week. I don't know any show like this that can reach Folsom, just like we reach Soledad here. And I reach Tracy, and I can reach Vacaville, particularly with the information coming out about the mind control. And I think it's important because in the state of California, reaching the capital of California, I feel badly because Evel Younger is running for governor of California, and I have many, many times called him a war criminal. He's covered up the assassination of Robert Kennedy. He's covered up, as a district attorney and the attorney general, the Donald DeFries role with the Los Angeles Police Department. And he was even called by Donald DeFries as a witness one time when DeFries was arrested. And Evel Younger has covered up these massive state massacres, or the Squad 19 plans that Lewis Tackwood talked about, even plans for killing Richard Nixon in San Diego. In fact, Bob is here with me. You were the one who obtained for me the documents of Andrew Topping in New York City, where the transfer to kill Richard Nixon went on in New York City.
Yeah, Andrew Topping was just one of a number of people during the Nixon administration who were engaging in various activities designed towards activating some of these people who are around who can be used in assassination plots and are just waiting sort of to be
killer.
Motivated. Yeah.
And he was arrested, and Bob went to the all ends to get the papers and documentation about his background with the oil people and the Pentagon and the mine. He was in the hospital, too.
Yeah, Topping. Yeah. Topping was a man who had been in the Army and had been volunteering his duties as an assassin to the Pentagon, and later got as far as having appointments in the White House itself, walking around in the White House. And
I think the reason he was arrested, the date that he was arrested was in August 72, was that then the money would link to the Mexican money and the Miami money that they were caught with Bernard Barker and these people, and it was important to know. He had already transacted money with agents for the killing of Nixon. Well, you know, these things were planned in California, and the Attorney General now is running for governor. Ed Davis of Los Angeles Police Department, who's covered up the whole Summa Corporation, Howard Hughes story, the killing of Robert Hall down there, the hiring of Lewis Tackwood with the plans to kill Nixon, the criminal conspiracy section that had a gun inside of Soledad prison where George Jackson was killed, and all the California violences that have come down have been under umbrella of zombies, the John Frazier and Charles Manson. The things that I've studied and talked about that came out of the California institutions and prisons and hospitals are so important because these people are running for higher office. It's like Goering and Goebbels moving up. And I use hard words. I call them what I think they are based upon the evidence, and I would meet them in any court or any place. I read today that D.A. Browning in San Francisco, who prosecuted Patty Hearst, wants to run for the Attorney General. He never prosecuted yet Emily William Harris for kidnapping Patty. They dropped the Carmichael Bank robbery when a woman was killed, sloughed that off, even though there was evidence they did this and the killing. He never prosecuted Mickey and Jack Scott for taking Patty Hearst out of the state. This state is run by a total police kind of an operation with the mind control, and I feel badly because I can get information like I did by Donald DeFries and Soledad and it when he was there from the prisoners. By having this contact through the state, I can take this information from here to New York to people like Bob who were turned on to information because my sources then become cut off, and I feel very, very badly about it. All I can suggest is that you do something about it. Call KZAP, call Travis on Sunday nights, call Mr. Williams, the station director, Robert Williams. Maybe he would settle for a half hour instead of an hour. It's the most unique audience that any radio newscaster can have, and it's a unique opportunity to get a network of information that no one else in the country gets for years later, which finally comes out. You know, I can say that these things are happening here, and then John Marks from the CIA could subpoena documents, but anyone who listened to Dialogue Conspiracy knew I was talking about this years ago. You heard me lecture in New York, I believe, when I was talking about these things. Were you there at the Elgin at that time?
Sure. We've been hearing from a lot of researchers that there are these people out in the country who have been programmed as part of assassination squads, and that it should be finally coming out in a documented form from the Pentagon or from the CIA is not so much of a revelation as the media would make you think, that these people have been exposing themselves through various accidents, such as when Andrew Topping was arrested in New York, or through occurrences such as the Hearst kidnapping, where these networks are exposed of people involved in mind control.
And the one reason that I could be the first person to expose them was because Dialogue Conspiracy was up in the areas like Soledad here and Vacaville and Folsom, where I could get the information that it was being done. And that was one of the ways that I was the first person to write about it.
Right. The primary level of research is in watching what's going on in the news and covering it that way and not waiting for the declassification of documents.
Well, I disagree. I think the primary is to get it from the men inside the institutions who were able to tell me about these parties, and then I could spread it on and people could look for it later. I think the primary source, the reason I feel so badly about KZAP, is that it's a primary source of people who are listening. Ken Corey, the state controller, was down at my house, flew down with five people regarding the Howard Hughes estate and information on the Hughes case because his son listens regularly to Dialogue Conspiracy KZAP. And we're reaching so many people. I know the ratings are there, that people will listen to a 20-minute slot, and they have figured out on scales of how many people listen to music and how many people listen to talk shows. But nobody's ever put in proportion how many people who listen to this particular show or respond are really movers and can affect the changes of history and are powerful. And every station that dries up that takes this thing, we're removed of the chance of doing something. Just this week after I got this letter from Robert Williams at KZAP, I was looking at some mail I had and came to the station today. Here's one from Ralph Mike Durling at Tracy, asking me for information. He says, I listen to Dialogue Conspiracy at KSAP, and he wrote me asking me for information that he wanted. And another one from Tahoe, from a Dane Edwards I brought, who says, I listen to Travis in Sacramento, and he wanted information about Richard Nixon and the Nazis and Herman Perry. Here's one from Bill Robinson at Folsom. I'm an inmate at Folsom and really like your program very much. We here at Folsom all listen to you and think you're really good. Keep up the good work. And then he asked me the name of a magazine, and he was interested in the assassinations and sent him a magazine. Another person, this Mike from Tracy, was asking about mind control because they know people at Vacaville, and where can they get tape cassettes of the shows? Here's a letter from Kenneth Hacker, University of Utah. May, I'm doing research, mass media influence. When we lived in Sacramento, I listened to your radio program each week. These are just letters that I was answering this Sunday night that have come in the last 2 weeks in July. I'm intrigued with the information. He asked me to help write a chapter in a book on media manipulating public consciousness of the Kennedy assassination from the University of Utah, who moved from Sacramento. Here's another letter from a gentleman, Tracy, Dual Vocational Institution. I'm inspired by hearing you in your most recent live dialogue on KZAP. He gave me information about how Charles Manson looks, what he's doing at Vacaville, how they're watching him because of things that I've said on the program. And then I got another letter asking for information. I'm impressed with your work. Somebody who had subjected themselves to some Silva mind control and was worried because they listened to KZAP and wanted information on the Silva mind control. So people want to know about behavior modification, Nixon and the Nazis, the Kennedy assassination. A letter from Douglas Fry. I don't hope they mind my using their name. He lives in Stockton, and he listens to KZAP, and he wanted other people in Northern California to know about it. And here's a woman from Auburn who listens every Sunday night. And we could go on and on. Whatever they decide, I don't have any control over what Mr. Williams do. I know that there was a time when Paul Revere went through with his little lantern warning people that problems were coming down in this country. And I don't think they took a poll to see whether they want to be awake at night or not, or whether people were even looking for the British. I think they did what they had to do. And maybe they would have told him his horse his shoes were worn down. He looked silly, you know, wearing that kind of a costume at night. I know that the people up there are really a great audience because I have gone up the last few years to Consumers River College, Sacramento River College, been to Folsom and been to the prisons, and I don't think I've ever felt so badly about a situation because I think the time is now to be more alert and not cut off information. I have an article from the Los Angeles Times this week on the formation of the Nazis in California, and I don't know how many of you saw it. That's the kind of information I share on Dialogue and Conspiracy. If you don't take the Los Angeles Times, you don't know that the Nazi Party is combining forces almost in every state around the country and is becoming a dangerous threat. And we have to be wary of it, and California is a big nest of it, as in Florida and Portland and all over the country. One of the things that Travis mentioned was that a lot of what we do in Dialogue Conspiracy might be duplicated with what they do earlier on the talk show, but that isn't true. It really can't be true because last few weeks I read from the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors the hearings of Lillian Castellano pleading with them on the Robert Kennedy case to open up the assassination investigation. And the next week, the testimony of Dr. Robert Joling, the president of American Forensic Pathologists, asking to open up the Robert Kennedy assassination. And nowhere except in the Board of Supervisors is that testimony told. Nobody has heard it. And only through these tapes going to Philadelphia and New York and New England and France and Ireland and all the different places that they're going now is this information going out. I got a letter from London this week asking for the tapes, and another one, as I say, 25 tapes in Ohio and 25 to Salt Lake City. That is the only way, it's the only media that we have to get this information out, and the city up there is so important. And I hope when Travis gets on the air and starts taking calls, and you have talk shows in Sacramento, that you ask him about this and write to Robert Williams. He's the program director, KZAP Radio, P.O. Box 511. You can call him, 916 is area code 444-2806, and do whatever you want. Write or call Travis, and maybe you'll have the same energy if you have the phone, to ask them about the situation that the people in New York City had on WBAI and see what we can do about keeping this information. And it's a live thing that's growing, and that's what worries me so much about the situation. Well, last week I talked about Mr. Fields in Sacramento. Here's another man I met who may become a key witness before the Kennedy Assassination Investigation Committee if his information is true. And I met him through the KZAP station. I meet people through the other shows, but this has been such a live situation. And last week, in case you didn't hear Dialogue Conspiracy, I talked about a man named Mr. Fields, asked for an attorney to possibly help him. He made allegations based upon information he got in Mexico in 1965 and 1966 that came from three or more sources, actually. And these were his conclusions, and I'll run them down, and then I will go along with what he said and go back to an unpublished manuscript put out in Texas called the Torba Document, which Bob has, and talk about that. Mr. Fields said, and I talked about this last week in more detail, that the murder of John Kennedy, the final plans at least, were made in Mexico City, that the CIA was part of the plans, that they had three teams of five members, an east-west plan, and I guess the middle, probably the middle would be Chicago, right? East-west team to Miami. He called the east team was definitely Miami, and then there was the Chicago and the Dallas. They used mercenaries trained for the Bay of Pigs invasion a few years earlier. The pitch to the particular mercenaries was that it was heroism, they should be brave and get involved. They claimed that Kennedy was going to liquidate the CIA and get his own kind of intelligence gathering system going. That Oswald was set up as a patsy, that Lee Harvey Oswald had a double, that Lee Harvey Oswald was alive. He said the assassination teams were in Mexico City and then were sent all over the world, all over these countries, from the same place where the assassins were trained in Mexico City. He had the quotation I read last year, the police have their rifle ranges, America has Mexico to practice on, train their riflemen. He claimed the plans were being made as early as 1965 to 66 to murder Robert Kennedy, and they talked about a man who would be programmed, set up as a zombie to believe he did it. Mr. Fields has copies of registered letters he sent to Robert Kennedy and his wife, which were ignored or never received by them. In 1976, the photographs and evidence that Mr. Fields had were taken from him by the Sacramento police. They were taken unlawfully from an automobile that was stolen. And he has the belief that the Sacramento police would still have them, but we have no way of knowing. If they get open his car, they may go into the car and take it so that we're not sure they still have it. I have a lot of background on Mr. Fields. He, as I said before, he was nominated at Columbia University for a Pulitzer Prize. He was president of a scientific laboratory in Contra Costa, California, where he tried to expose a judge who is now in Orange County who he believed was responsible for the murder of another lawyer and for taking the possessions of a wealthy woman. He became in trouble with the police in California for being nosy, at which time the harassments began on Mr. Fields in Sacramento. The property where he was located with his car was told, the owners were told that it would be condemned if they allowed him to stay there. The president of the California Association of Physically Handicapped claims that his files were definitely doctored and that the people that would be taking care of him were discriminating against him. He was picked up for many, many convictions that were dropped, but in the meantime, they had a chance to go through his property. He was denied counsel at his trials every time he was picked up. He was denied help, medical help, and also he was subjected to sound torture. The police in the jails told the other men to beat noises and make a lot of noise because he was his trouble with his ears drove him really sick, and he still has problem with his ears, so they made noise and tried to subject him to these sound problems. Mr. Fields has gone through hell in trying to survive and expose criminals up and down the state and collusion of the police department. And his vehicle was towed away by the Sacramento police July 74. They filed a paper saying that we checked inside and we found only papers and books and old food stuff and other junk nothing of value to be booked, so they destroyed it. The old papers and books could carry the pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald with the CIA agents in Mexico or other agents of the CIA in Mexico. He was harassed for applications at the welfare offices. He's been denied many of his rights, and they say he keeps getting arrested in his automobile and carted away. He sent me a diagram of all the various arrests and the dates, and starting 68, and one case was dismissed, another one was dismissed, a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth, a seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, 11th, 12th, one not yet solved. In each case, he was arrested. Here are the dates, and charged with all kinds of charges. And at these times, they took things from his car, towed them away, and did a thievery of his documents and papers. Okay, let's get back to Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald in Mexico. What Mr. Fields heard what was going on. He got pictures of these people. He knows people who he believes have pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald. And then I go back to a document I often refer to as the Torbett document. Torbett is a pseudonym for a man. I believe I met him. He's an attorney. I've met his investigator in Texas, Midlothian, Texas, when I was visiting Penn Jones. In 1970, a document was gotten out, 300 pages, called the Torbett document, which was a complete description of the assassination cabal, the assassination of John Kennedy. And then these same operatives were involved in the Martin Luther King murder, the Robert Kennedy, and also the plans to kill Charles de Gaulle in France. The document has a lot of references to it. I'm just going to stick to Lee Harvey Oswald in Mexico, what the Torbett document talks about and the allegations that Mr. Fields had. Remember, Mr. Fields was there in 1965 and 66, and the Torbett document was completed and distributed in 1970. So while Mr. Fields was hearing these things by various CIA agents or people in Mexico who knew them, or various parties there, the Torbett document was being put together in a different place in Texas, and these are some of the allegations. The Torbett document talks about a double of Lee Harvey Oswald by the name of Donald Norton, who was also mentioned in the Paris Flamone book, The Kennedy Conspiracy, talks about Donald Norton. I've met this Donald Norton, or the exact dead ringer for Lee Harvey Oswald in the Midwest, with another researcher at the home of John Judge. The Torbett document says Donald Norton started working for the CIA and the Permandex organization in 1957. There's a new article out in Gallery this month on the mind control of the assassins, and it mentions the Permandex in that article, and also my work on the SLA and mind control. The Torbett book says, in 1962, in September, Don Norton was dispatched from Atlanta, Georgia, to go to Mexico with $50,000 to pay the anti-Castro group that were then located in Mexico. They registered at the Yamahel Hotel in Monterrey, Mexico. Harvey Lee was an exact duplicate of Lee Harvey Oswald. He had hair thicker, and he contacted Norton, and they exchanged the money. Harvey Lee got from Donald Norton this money and then took it down, and they received some necessary documents in a manila envelope. Alberta was the passphrase, and Albert Osborne was the man that Oswald worked with going down to Mexico, and Albert Osborne was on the board of directors of Permandex with Clay Shaw. And then Osborne paid for Lee Harvey Oswald's fair pay for Cuba pamphlets in New Orleans. Alberta was the passphrase, and also the clue, the weather is warm in Tulsa. He says that Oswald had doubles, that the assassination money was paid off in Mexico, and there were code names that they identified these friends. And that's what Mr. Fields said, that Oswald had doubles, the money transactions, the teams were in Mexico. And he referred in his document to a code name that Lee Harvey Oswald used. In this case, Alberta and the weather's warm was the password. The Torbett document, it's made by this lawyer, we'll call him Mr. Torbett for practical purposes, said the assassination was done by a team of highly trained professional assassins inside Mexico. That's, as I say, it was written in Texas and put together by people inside the intelligence community. And Mr. Fields was saying that the trained assassins were also in Mexico, that they were trained professional assassins located in Mexico. So that's consistent with what this gentleman is saying in Sacramento. The document from Texas said these men blended in with the anti-Castro Cubans under the direction of the Free Cuba members in Mexico City, Dallas, New Orleans, Montreal, Miami, Chicago, Kansas, and Los Angeles. And Mr. Field said that there were plans. There were three teams of five assassins, each, as I mentioned. The only difference is that the communists and the socialists in Mexico were suspicious of the anti-Castro Cubans, and they weren't blending in very well because they had these Aryan-type leaders, such as Mr. Phillips or H.L. Hunt, and who didn't blend in, and they knew they were CIA, and Lee Harvey Oswald didn't blend in with the men that they knew were anti-Castro Cubans, and that's why the group that he knew started taking the pictures. The Cubans blended in with the Mexicans, but the Aryan types didn't blend in at all, so that Albert Osborne and Lee Harvey Oswald and Mr. Hunt or the CIA officers who were working and handing the money didn't blend in, neither did Don Norton, and that's why, as I say, the pictures were taken. The Torbett document says that 25 to 30 of the most proficient riflemen were used and came from Mexico, and they were used for espionage agencies of the U.S. and various countries all over the world for political killings the past 25 years. Mr. Field said the assassins not only trained for John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, but were sent all over the world. The Torbett document says that Division 5 of the FBI, that I've mentioned many times on Dialogue Conspiracy with William Sullivan, of Watergate fame, still working in Division 5 of the FBI, this internal security, obtained 10 of the world's best riflemen through the offices of Double Check Corporation for this job. 10 would be two teams of five, and there were three teams, one in Miami, and I believe that 10, five each, five were at the Love Airfield, and five were at the Texas School Book Depository. A lot of people think that a team were at the trademark, the International Trademark, but because there was a Oswald who got a job at Love Airfield on October 16th and was hired on October the 16th, 1963, the same days that he went to the Book Depository, that I believe that the provisions were made if the motorcade was changed, they could kill him at the airport. If there was one Oswald at the airport, then the team of assassins was at the airport. In case they didn't get him one place, they could get him coming and going on the airplane. And if the motorcade had been changed the week before, they wouldn't have had to use that Oswald. And that's what I think it was. There's no indication of the trademark. And the Torbett document said this was all funded by a subsidiary of Permandex. And many of you people will hear Permandex. Bob and I have heard Permandex for years, right?
Yeah. Permandex was probably first brought to public light after some of the assassination attempts on Charles de Gaulle in 1960 and 61, when the French intelligence agency, trying to find out who was behind these plots, came across this organization, Permandex, which also called itself the Centro
Mondiale
Commerciale.
Yeah. With Credit Suisse Bank.
Right.
That's right.
And after the French intelligence uncovered their role in the de Gaulle plots, Permandex had to move their offices from Zurich. Later on, when Permandex was implicated in fixing the Italian parliamentary elections, they had to move from their offices in Rome. And at last reports, they
Rhodesia.
Moved to South Africa.
It is interesting that James Earl Ray was on the way to Rhodesia, and he was linked to this. And also, Farewell America brings in the Permandex funding. And I think that, as I say, Gallery Magazine this month has an article on the programmed assassins and mentions Permandex. And Dick Russell's mentioned Permandex in his articles. But just as we talked about MK Ultra, I talked about it 3 or 4 years ago, as early as 72, 73, and 74, Permandex will become known as a word for these assassination funding teams through the Credit Suisse in Basel, Switzerland, and then it moved to South Africa. Fields had said that this planning team was going to take care of the Robert Kennedy assassination, and Permandex has been named as the umbrella for all these assassinations, that organization. Now, Donald Norton, this character Donald Norton, met David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald, and David Ferry was Jack Ruby's contact earlier in their career. He knew him since 1958, and Norton went to Freeport in the Grand Bahamas and was working for the CIA as late as 1966. If this is the same Donald Norton that is mentioned as the double for Oswald that carried the money, I met him, and it was in Dayton in 1973. It was the 10th anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy, and I met him at the home of John Judge. He knew I was lecturing there, and he had called me several times from places around the country, and he met me in a lot afterwards leaving the building. He didn't come to hear the lecture, I was standing him back, and certainly wasn't recognized, but as we broke up and walked down an alley to John's place down this back street, and he went one way and started to walk down the street, and then came back and said, "Do you know who I am?" And I didn't know. He looked like Lee Harvey Oswald, but he calls himself Don Norton, and that's where I met him, and I'm still in touch with him sometimes. Don Norton, according to the Torbert document, was involved with all the intermediaries in the plot who were located in Dallas, and two of them that are named in the Torbert document are Raymond Cortez, an American-Mexican, and Fernando Fiedo. And it's interesting, these two men that are named in this manuscript as sending the money to Mexico for the assassins worked at a bank at 14 Wall Street in New York City. And if you look at volume 26, page 103 of the Warren Commission hearings, Marguerite Oswald was at offices at 14 Wall Street, New York City, when she was living in New York City with Lee Harvey Oswald when he was in high school age, when he was a juvenile. And she had built the buildings that she was with, the welfare buildings, were in that same office. And that's an interesting, because later, Lee Harvey Oswald then goes right into Civil Air Patrol with David Ferry after they come back to New Orleans. And the same office, it may be a big building, but it's one of those big coincidences, I believe, too. Well, Albert Osborne, the missionary who went with Lee Harvey Oswald on the bus to Mexico City, where these assassins were trained, was in Clay Shaw's office, Clay Shaw, 124 Camp Street in New Orleans. He's been pinned there in October 19th, 1963. When Lee Harvey Oswald came back from Mexico, he was in the office of Clay Shaw, who has been identified as being in the CIA. And Albert Osborne was at the office of a man named Maurice Brooks Catlin and also Guy Bannister. And he went from there directly to Mexico City early in September with Lee Harvey Oswald. Before he went to Mexico, he met with Guy Bannister. Guy Bannister was the chief of FBI in Chicago with Robert Mayhew of the Howard Hughes Organization before he opened his offices, which he shared with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. And Bannister then died at the time, at the time of the District Attorney Garrison's investigation in New Orleans. But Albert Osborne has been identified as going directly to the office of Gatlin and Guy Bannister, and then going to Mexico with Lee Harvey Oswald in September 17th and 18th in 1963. Osborne was then later seen in Mexico posing with a man. He had a picture taken with a man who posed as Lee Harvey Oswald, who wasn't, and a black Cuban, who also was at the hotel where Lee Harvey Oswald stayed with him in Mexico, and they delivered a large sum of money to a man who posed as Lee Harvey Oswald. And they were very verbal and were photographed saying, "This is to kill an important person in the USA." And, of course, that's to set up Lee Harvey Oswald later, that this man was impersonating Lee Harvey Oswald. We know that a man in Mexico was photographed and identified as the CIA as being Lee Harvey Oswald, and it wasn't him at all. But they did have better doubles, and they had a picture taken, and it would be interesting to know where these are, because money did pass, and yet the name Oswald could be associated with killing, just like going to the apartment of Silvio Odio and using the name Oswaldo and saying, "You don't have courage, I can kill the president." The role of the Oswald double, who looked so much like Lee Harvey Oswald, was that he could go around and badmouth the president or talk about money coming in and killing. And then that would be the route to set up Lee Harvey Oswald as a patsy while he's in Mexico doing one job. Well, you know the route. Bob knows this very well.
And Oswald may well have been setting himself up, thinking that he was perhaps a double for another person.
Yeah, this is what Mr. Field said, that Oswald did set himself up and made a lot of noise in the embassies because he was afraid he was going to be set up. And he wanted the CIA, if he was set up, everyone to know that he was working with the CIA. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what he told me. He had been in Mexico, and this is what he heard, that he purposely went in front of the Cuban consulate and made himself obnoxious, then called the CIA, and they had recording of his voices, so if ever they wanted to set him up, the Americans would know.
Yeah. In the shadowy world that these people are circulating, they can never be quite sure who it is that they're setting up. The man who was holding up the rifle in the newspapers in Oswald's backyard and in New Orleans could never be sure whether Oswald's head would be plastered on top of that photograph
Dallas.
Or his own.
Yeah, in Dallas. Well, you know, this getting back to the Torbert document, Bob has a copy, too. They claim that Lee Harvey Oswald entered Mexico at Laredo, Texas, September 26, 1963, and then 100 miles south of where he entered on the exact day at Ciudad Miguel Alemán were other agents that worked with Lee Harvey Oswald, George DeMint and Florence Parson DeMint, along with an Anthony Oswald, and Samuel Thomas North and Judith Marie North. And all five of these people were Russian exiled members of the Solidaris, the Galen Operation, the White Russian community. They entered Mexico the same day as Lee Harvey Oswald, and September the 17th in New Orleans, they got their tourist cards simultaneously, tour in front of them and tour behind. It was the 17th that they got their cards, and when they entered days later on the 26th, they all show up in Mexico at the same time at the same place. And they said that Lee Harvey Oswald re-entered the United States on October the 3rd, 1963, and the same day that he re-entered, and Anthony Oswald re-entered again at the same city at Ciudad Miguel, that they traveled together, but not together. They were just 100 miles apart, but going the same places and returning about the same place, 100 miles apart. On the bus going to Mexico City, as I said, was Albert Osborne, alias John Howard Bowen, who also, there was a T. Gonzalez on there who was an active agent with Jack Ruby, who was on the bus, who worked with Carlos Prio Siqueiros, the man that recently died in Miami, and Jack Ruby's friend, Mr. McEwen, and David Ferry. This Mr. Gonzalez was on the bus with Albert Osborne and Lee Harvey Oswald, so they had a lot of company. I wonder if the company of trailing them is kept in case they want to run and get out of a plot. Have you ever thought about that, the following them? I think, as I've been reading books about Howard Hughes, they would fix up certain starlets and give them piano lessons and voice lessons, and the chauffeurs would take them, and they'd take them out to dinner at Perino's, then they'd have an agent follow them and one follow them. Do you think it's so they wouldn't jump out the car and leave in the process of the brain control or the monopoly of their minds and bodies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and several missions that Oswald was going on. He was always surrounded by people with connections to the intelligence community.
These people were
obviously around him, what they were watching for, whether it was to make sure that he continues on.
That stays in the same place.
Stays in the same place.
Because what if he goes to somebody and says, hey, there's a plot to kill Kennedy, then he could be killed on the spot. How many people might have been killed already that would have averted some of these murders?
Right.
Or who knows, say that Jimmy Carter would be murdered or somebody else would be murdered. And somebody follows them, so if they give a message, they're wiped out, and then they can use a backlog of assassins.
Mm-hmm.
The gallery talks about having a backlog of trained assassins, and I know for sure they do have a group of people programmed and ready to step in.
Yeah, constantly being watched. I think also, besides these people who were on the bus with Oswald, when Oswald was applying for his visa to get into Mexico, the man who apparently was right behind him online, because his visa was numerically the next visa, uh-huh, was William Godet, who, besides having contacts with Jack Ruby, was also involved with the CIA.
And also worked with Carlos Berenguer at a time where there was a talk of killing Richard Nixon in New Orleans.
Right.
Remember that scare of Richard Nixon? And Godet went out to a commune in New Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
And his name came up, the Andrew Topping material you have and the material I have of Louis Tackler. We both have. We share all this. And Godet, he was also on that bus going to Mexico with Lee Harvey Oswald and is proven to be a CIA agent, acknowledges and talks about like Gordon Novell.
Godet, in a recent interview, said that if you want to know anything about the Cubans that was going on in 1963, you should talk to Eduardo.
Eduardo, which is E. Howard Hunt. Yeah, I was surprised to see in Bernard Fensterwald's a picture of Godet because he's really an old man, kind of a pudgy old man. I picture him as being younger, fleeing to a commune. I don't know why. But the Torba document goes on to explain that the Free Cuban Committee was the element that was in Mexico. There were five fronts to these assassinations, but the Free Cuban Committee was the group that was sending the agents and paying them and getting ready for the crossfires and the actual killing. We do have the Solidaris, who served a valuable role in creating that phony personality of Lee Harvey Oswald, and we have these other members of the assassination teams. There were five sections, the Council of Churches that sent the money down to Albert Osborne's missionaries and didn't know he wasn't a missionary. The World Council of Churches, he's racist, and Albert Osborne himself was a Nazi, and he was funded by churches that didn't know they were sending to a school of assassins around the country. The Free Cuban Committee was formed in New Orleans. It was headed, as I said before, by Guy Bannister, a man who moved to New Orleans from Chicago. Bannister worked with Robert Mayhew of the CIA and FBI, and the man who was hired to select the assassination teams, his offices were part of the office of Lee Harvey Oswald, and when Oswald printed handbills down in New Orleans, he used the address 554 Camp Street. the Hands Off for Cuba, and that office backed up to the FBI office, where that man worked directly with the Howard Hughes, Robert Mayhew contacts. And then the handbills were paid by Albert Osborne. Have you seen that when I crossfiled the 26 volumes? And they went to the printer. Who paid for it? The Fair Play for Cuba? It was picked up and paid by Mr. Osborne in New Orleans. Lee Harvey Oswald didn't even pick them up. The existence of this espionage team started in 1943 at the end or during the World War II when the Nazis were beginning to take their $600 million to Argentina for fear that Russia would win the war. And J. Edgar Hoover was behind this. The OSS was behind this. Then it became the CIA. And they formed these teams. Albert Osborne, John Howard Bowen, alias J.H. Owen, also was part of a campfire council in Knoxville, Tennessee. It was a Nazi camp, a black shirt group, funded by the American Council of Christian Churches. And Osborne posed them as a church leader so that Lee Harvey Oswald was traveling with a man of the church. Osborne had lived in central Mexico since 1942, and I guess it was at that time that they began to set up these teams of assassins. And he had a mission, and these young men gathered and appeared, and Volume 25 has names of certain people that funded the church, a Reverend Hukin who gave him money for Mexican boys at the residence. I have a list of the various agents who funded down at the church. Well, that law conspiracy is up. We're just about winding it up for our time for today. I've covered quite a bit about Mr. Fields, enough to get to the committee in Washington, D.C., and I do hope that those people that listen in the northern area write to Mr. Williams or call him and see maybe we can do a half hour there instead of 10 minutes a week and hopefully keep the information flowing. I hate to see it cut off at this point. Well, take care, and if the fire doesn't consume Carmel Valley by next week, you'll know next week if we're not on the air. If we're on the air, we're okay. There's a fire coming down the valley, and it's scary. It's really scary. But so keep your fingers crossed. I'll be back on Dialogue Conspiracy next week. Take care of everything until then, and I'll see you then.
Where is the truth? I thought to myself. We're driving down Route 68. Car in front is a Renault. It's not behind. It's not a Ford. Where is the truth? How things happen. If it was yesterday, it wasn't 1894. And if tomorrow not a two come true, there'll be another truth in store. And those who think there is no truth, that all depends on point of view, will lock us up, fire the bomb made only for a gentleman to use. The president is just a choice. He should not incite or claim his fame. One November night, I heard the screaming horns. A new America had changed her name. We're not the same, you and I are not. You who call free thinkers enemies, you are clearly now the enemies. And we will do what we must do to keep it free. Like I must write, and she must sing, and they must slay. You must have heard that we will never really rise again. The mind behind the plastic mule gave the word. They cannot just mow us down. It's they who are the arch-anemic ones. Ours are free and tender girls. Ours are mountain-climbing sons. So you and I, we disagree. Truth exists, but misery. I cry for you, I cry for us, as I prepare to leave the bus.